bcfm.org.uk. BCFM News from the Sky News Centre.
From the Sky News Centre at 5. The Home Secretary claims the head of the UK Border Agency relaxed passport controls last summer without ministerial sanction. Brodie Clark was suspended last week amid claims national security was put at risk when biometric tests on foreign nationals were dropped to reduce queues at airports. Theresa May says she had authorised certain checks to be dropped.
In July, I agreed that the UK Border Agency could pilot a scheme that would allow Border Force officials to target intelligence-led checks on higher-risk categories of travellers. We've since discovered that Brodie Clark, the head of UK Border Force, authorised the wider relaxation of border controls without ministerial sanctions.
A family of rogue builders who conned people out of almost £500,000 have been handed prison sentences totalling 20 years. Francis Tomney, his twin sons and his nephew targeted elderly people by posing as driveway specialists, disguising milk as an expensive sealant. Detective Inspector Gary Brooks from Lancashire Police says the levels of deception were staggering.
They've deceived people on their own doorsteps and they've done work which is totally substandard and in some cases has meant that remedial action needed to be taken and they've had the audacity to charge these elderly people for further money for that additional work. Purely despicable.
Police investigating the motorway pile-up in Somerset on Friday are speaking to the organisers of a nearby fireworks display. They're looking at whether heavy smoke played a part in the crash on the M5, in which 7 people were killed. A second woman from North London has died after a crush in a Northampton nightclub last month. Lauren Danielle Jackson, a 19-year-old student from Wembley, died in hospital yesterday. Nearly 9,000 tickets for events at the Olympics have been bought by the government. The bill runs up to £750,000. And Ireland's rugby union captain Brian O'Driscoll has been ruled out of action for up to 6 months due to shoulder surgery. That's the latest. I'm Adam Lindsay.
Bristol Community FM is a registered charity, which means we're not for profit. And we're now able to support local business by offering low-cost promotional announcements and adverts about your business or products. You could even sponsor a show, event or outside broadcast. So why not support the station that supports the communities of Bristol? And contact us today to find out more. BCFM 93.2 FM. Bristol is our community.
BCFM can help you increase your sales this Christmas. For only £25 a month, you could reach thousands of listeners by advertising on this radio station. Email me now for details, pat@bcfm.org.uk. Advertise your business this Christmas on our award-winning Bristol radio station.
BCFM 93.2.
Did you know that on King Square in Bristol, you could hire facilities to hold your functions? It could be for a meeting, a conference or a party. The rates are better than you can ever imagine. And you can use the kitchen and bar area too. Why not check out the Bristol Centre for Deaf People and book your event? Email office@centrefordeaf.org.uk. It's more than just a centre.
BCFM is the award-winning community radio station for Bristol and is here to give everybody in Bristol a voice. BCFM 93.2. Bristol is our community. Bristol Community FM 93.2.
It's Real Talk on BCFM 93.2, just 3 minutes past 5 o'clock. Pat Hart is here, and also Tony Glosin and Mikey from the Afro Topical, typically, and I always get the name mixed up, show here on BCFM. We're talking about Occupy Bristol, and shortly we're going to be crossing over live to College Green as well. Tony is in studio because he has some an insight, I guess, historically, into protests, in not only just within the UK, but right across the world, and I know Mikey will have opinions as well. How you doing, guys? You okay?
Yeah.
All good.
I think you know what they're doing down at Occupy Bristol is really something which has been going on for centuries here. It's been a sort of a battle in a way. Things being pulled one way and the other way between a government that is making decisions which favour ordinary people, as they, for example, did after the Second World War. There was a whole kind of social programme came in, the National Health Service, Social Security. Because in the run-up to the Second World War, there was mass unemployment, and we had something called the Unemployed Movement, where literally tens of thousands of people came down to London because they couldn't get work and were lying down in the streets. The whole of Oxford Street, the whole of Regent Street was completely brought to a halt by unemployed people who were lying down in the street. And of course, the however many police you sent at the problem, there were tens of thousands of people, so they couldn't move them all on. The unemployed movement, Wal Hannington and the communists in the run-up to the Second World War, gained a lot of support for socialism because they were saying, look, this capitalist system isn't working. And actually, we're in a similar kind of situation now. We can see the same kind of social problems coming along as less and less jobs are around for people and there's more and more unemployed. And yet still, a lot of the unemployed people are being blamed for the problem. Actually, it was created by the super rich, by the bankers.
Okay. Mikey, protests have been going on for a little while now. Just your initial thoughts before we kind of move on to it in more depth.
Yeah, I mean, I'm getting mixed reviews from how people perceive the Occupy Bristol movement. I mean, a lot of people are saying, well, what is the actual agenda? What are they protesting for? And on the other hand, people are saying people are glad to see the solidarity amongst the people. So, I mean, me personally, I see it as a protest, and it's a valid protest in these times we're living in of a so-called depression, recession. So it is a valid protest in my eyes, but I mean, I can see the point of view that other people have got, which is, well, there's not really clear on the outcome, what they actually want to achieve with the Occupy Bristol movement. So it's interesting.
Sure.
One.
It's also a big springboard off the Arab Spring that we saw earlier this year.
Yeah.
People have seen the student protests in Britain.
Yeah.
A lot of people commenting on what's been going on over in the Arab world are saying that actually a lot of Arab people watched what was going on in London with the student protests last autumn and were saying, ah, look, you know, we can do this too.
Maybe it inspired that. I mean, there are so many different prongs to the discussions and the arguments, and hopefully there's no way, I guess, we're gonna completely change opinion, but we're certainly going to have a look and examine some of the different points of view within this next hour. And guys, remember, here on BCFM, we're following everything that's happening with Occupy Bristol, almost daily updates during the weekdays, and we're planning to broadcast live, hopefully, during Wednesday drive time for that as well. We're going to take a track, and then we're going to hopefully speak to Video Tony, who is at College Green. This is Wilkes, local music. You can't keep walking away.
Please tell me that love is the key. No, it could never be, cause you know you're all about pain and gain, money and competition. So please just refrain. All this life will stay the same. That's right, that's why you gotta play the games. Don't say a word up. You can't keep walking away. 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 Just woke up on the face another day. Feeling kinda good, running deep inside of me. Rasta, I free roll with positivity. No, Rasta, care, I roll with no negativity. On the low street, social politics attend. On the high street, yeah, glitter is the thing. Never gonna lose, yeah, always gonna win. God they bless me, no mix with no Babylon thing. Sending your emotions, you won't get no gain. Cars, houses, money, yeah, it's all the same. Yeah, I feel I picked up in your smoothing game. Yeah, but on the low street, no, I can't refrain. You got little kids crying cause mom is no more. Why dad is on the crack cause he's living the war. Why the high streets hustling the game and stuff. Yeah, but life is a whole lot, said it's getting rough. And I just heard the news, the world tracing the building, felt the blues. Innocent people, why they had to lose. Please talk to me. Can't keep walking away. You can't keep walking away. You can't keep walking away. You can't keep walking away. Hey, you can't keep walking away. You can't keep walking away. You can't keep walking away. You can't keep walking away.
Talk to me. Talk to me.
Hey, Big Sir. Can you talk to me? I'm just another brother from the STP. I know that you think that you're smarter than me, but I wanna have a minute of your time, you see. Tell me, why do you choose to make people feel the blues? Knowing in life they're gonna lose. Every day talking at the same old stuff, when you know in your heart that it's all a bluff. So please tell me that love is the key. No, it could never be, cause you know you're all about pain and gain, money and competition. So please just refrain. All this life will stay the same. That's right, you gotta play the games. Don't say a word up. You can't keep walking away.
You can't keep walking away. You can't keep walking away. You can't keep walking away. Hey, you can't keep walking away. 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 Hey, you can't keep walking away. 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 Hey, you can't keep walking away.
A little bit of real talk on Bristol Community FM 93.2. Bristol music from Wilkes. Track's entitled You Can't Keep Walking Away. Listen, if you've got a view, something that you'd like to say about anything that we're discussing in this hour, this is how you contact us. The text number, just the cost of a normal text, is 0752 880 2347. That's 0752 880 2347. Or you can email us studio@bcfm.org.uk. Now hopefully we got Tony on the line, who is at College Green. Tony, how you doing?
Hiya, how are you doing, mate?
Yeah, we're good, good. Set us the scene at College Green. It's been like a bit of a cold and a bit of a miserable day right across the city. How are things looking there, Tony?
Yeah, well, it's been a bit drizzly today. The weather has been down a bit from the past few days, but I think generally we're coping with that quite well. I mean, today we've just got on and done work around the site and, you know, got on with constructions and... basically tidying it up.
Okay, we got Tony Godden in studio and also Mikey as well. Hopefully, throughout the hour, we're going to be able to talk to some different people with some differing views. Have you lined anyone up for us so far, Tony?
Yeah, I've got a chap with me right now. It's Mark.
Yeah.
And he can give you a little bit of an update on how things are going here as well. So here's Mark.
Okay, thanks very much indeed, Tony. Mark, how you doing? You're speaking to Patrick, Tony, and Mikey, live in a BCFM studio. How you doing? You all right?
Hi, guys. Yeah, I'm doing okay, man.
Good.
It's been an interesting day. We've had a few more people arrive, and the numbers are growing. We've had The Guardian here doing a documentary on us today. So a lot of people's been getting on camera and basically talking about the issues at hand, the political corruption, the corruption of the banking sector, you know, and basically the rest of us getting screwed over by it. So it's been a good day so far. Tonight it's a bit drizzly, it's a bit muddy, but
sure.
Spirits are high.
I was going to ask you about that. Well, I mean, how many people are actually camped there? You know, just your rough guesstimate at the moment.
About 110, 115, something like that.
Okay.
I mean, it depends. I mean, during the day, obviously, a lot of people have to go to work and stuff.
Sure.
Which is something, you know, I mean, you won't see in the Evening Post, but people actually, there's not everybody on site is on the dole or anything like that. There is people who go to work. I don't know whether you know, the other week we had a surgeon who works for the NHS who was here 2 weeks with us. We've got structural engineers on site. We've got computer engineers, software developers, graphic designers, youth and community workers. These are the types of people we've got on site. We've got some unemployed people as well, and there's a wide section of society here representing the people of Bristol.
Why do you think the mainstream media don't want people to know that? Because obviously we spoke to Tony, who's with you now, last week, and we said, look, the media want to paint the protesters as a load of alkies, drug dealers, homeless people, anarchists, people that don't normally fit into society. Why do you think the media, the mainstream media, and we're not just talking about, you know, the BBC nationally, we're talking about, unfortunately, some of our local media, the Bristol Evening Post, the local BBC, the local ITV, and even some of the commercial radio stations. Why are they painting you guys in such a way, do you think?
Because I think there's a good reason for that. Because if the general public actually comes up and talks to us, they'll find out that we're actually just like them. You know what I mean? We all have the same concerns. We all have the same hopes. We all have the same ambitions. You know what I mean? We all want a better future. And the thing is, it's like I've always believed that if we can come together and actually realise, you know what I mean, that we have got a lot in common, we can accomplish anything. And this is my belief. And my kind of belief, that's the reason why they're trying to portray us as this kind of counterculture movement, when in actual fact we're ordinary people from Bristol, we're taxpayers,
sure.
We're council taxpayers, you know. But the thing is that the media like to do with anything that poses a threat to the establishment, to try to demonise us. I mean, this afternoon I had some young girl come up to me nearly in tears, and she was like, thank you for doing this, thank you for being here. You know, she says, I've been desperate to do something and not knowing what to do, and I've just found out that you're here. What can I do to help? And this is the response that we've been getting.
Sure.
I mean, this morning a pensioner, I'm saying, would have been in his mid-60s, came up with a tin with like a bag with a few tins in it, and he says, I don't know what I can do, but here I want to help you in some way, and gave me a bag full of tins of food. You know what I mean? And this is like the people of Bristol.
So there's a lot of goodwill there, obviously. Now, one of the things, two things I was going to ask you. One of them is that's not a Bristol accent. So obviously, a lot of your critics are going to say, "Oh, what's he just come down from Geordieland? Has he just to come and protest?" What's your background here in the city?
I've been living in Bristol for the last 4 years.
Okay.
My reason for being here. Most of your listeners will remember what Thatcher did in the 80s.
Mm.
How she basically destroyed all the working movements in the UK, destroyed the heavy industry that we had up in the northeast. We had big industry in shipbuilding. We had a massive industry in mining. We had a massive steel industry, and I can remember as a five-year-old, my dad taking me out on a protest march because he was trying to protest against Thatcher's basically breakup of British Steel.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Thatcher got away like she did with most industry and all over the country, really.
Well, some commentators did say that she had a love child. His name was Tony Blair, and he carried on the work. I mean, that's not me saying it. Obviously, it's just something I read somewhere. You know. But listen.
I'd agree with you on that one. I mean, that was the thing. I was Labour through and through.
Sure.
Up until Tony Blair came into power.
Mm. So was
Labour
I.
Party, and I just walked away, man, and I've never looked at the Labour Party in the same way.
Sure. Listen, very quickly, I want to ask you because we're gonna we got the guys in the studio as well. Remembrance Sunday. Now we know over in London there's this big hoo-ha. People are saying, look, people are not going to be able to commemorate Remembrance Sunday in the way that they want to. What are the plans in Bristol? Have you been in any negotiations or
There hasn't been any need for any negotiations. I mean, we've always said from the start, you know what I mean, we're here to protest political corruption. We're here to protest the lack of opportunity within society. We're here to protest the corruption of the banks, corruption within government, and corruption within the corporate sector. Now, the thing is, nobody has ever said, I'm here in the freezing cold rain to protest Remembrance Sunday. Nobody's ever said that. And this is the thing, the media has spun it as if we're going to cause disruption to the Remembrance Day parade, which nobody has ever said that, and myself, I find it insulting that the media would do that. Because
sure.
I mean, I'm not going to do anything that's going to look bad on the memory of my grandparents who fought in the war.
Listen,
we had somebody from the British Legion up here the other day.
Yeah,
and he said, you know, the media's been ringing him up, trying to get him to condemn what we're doing here on College Green, and
right.
I haven't spoken to them. Because I fought in the war so that yous could do this.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm not going to condemn what yous are doing.
Of course.
And this is the head guy from the British Legion who's organising it.
Excellent. All right, listen, very quickly, before we move on, I've got Tony Goslin in the studio. I think Tony's going to have a quick word.
Hi, Mark. Yeah, it's interesting what you're saying about the British Legion. And I'd heard also that although there have been criticism in London and in Bristol, people saying, for example, Stephen Williams criticised, this is the Liberal Democrat MP, criticising the possibility that events might be being disrupted by the fact that you've got a camp there on College Green, that actually there is a lot of support in, you know, officially from the Royal British Legion, and that's a fascinating side of things. So why is it that some MPs are sort of invoking this idea that the veterans of the Second World War and other wars are against you, when actually there certainly is a certain amount of official support?
I agree with you on that point, Tony. I mean, this morning there was a squad, he came on site, and I was talking with him for a few minutes. I mean, he's there in his combat fatigues and everything, and we're talking away. And I mean, there was no problem. There's no problem there. I mean, I'm not here to protest the Remembrance Day parade. I've never been here to protest the Remembrance Day parade. Now, the thing is with the MP you've just mentioned, I think myself, he's just a political opportunist. Now, he's come out and said that we don't want our veterans seeing tents and stuff like that. The veterans have gone through... The veterans have seen worse than tents on a green. You know what I mean? And like, kind of he's going on like that. This isn't about veterans. We're an embarrassment to them. And good. If he feels uncomfortable about us being here, that's exactly the reason why we're here.
Don't you think, in a way, Mark, that you've hit on a nerve here? Because the reaction of our politicians to what you're doing almost is like you're separating the sheep from the goats, the real politicians who really do represent ordinary people and care about those who are suffering with terrible fuel bills, this kind of thing, potential mass unemployment, from those politicians who have got more of an eye to their own political career, possibly, and a career in business after they leave politics.
Well, this is the thing. Like you see, I mean, it's like, I mean, if anybody really thinks that the politicians actually represent us, I mean, it's.
But you know. To be fair, there are politicians out there, aren't there, Mark, that do support this. You know, there are. And Kerry McCarthy, for example, is one. She's a Labour MP, Bristol Labour MP, that's basically in support. And also the Labour politicians in the City Council, the leader, Peter Hammond, has come out very much in support of what you're doing. Whereas Sean Bynan, who's another Labour councillor, I noticed was making noises that you shouldn't be there. So what you're doing, it seems to me, is actually you've really hit a nerve, and which it almost doesn't matter which political party we're talking about, you'll find some of our political representatives are with you and some are against you.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, it's like we've spoken to a couple of members of the Green Party who are supporting us, and like you say, the member of the Labour Party there, and it's nice to know that Kerry McCarthy's actually standing out and supporting us as well. I didn't know that. I mean, there is a minority there who are in support of us. I mean, but this is the thing. I mean, what we want to see is these political leaders following our will, not their own will and the will of big business. You know what I mean? They're there to represent our views, our hopes, our ambitions. Not the will and ambitions of big business, not their own political agendas or anything like that. They're there to represent us, and they need to know that. They need to remember who put them there. They need to know exactly what they're doing.
But the thing is, Mark, they will come back to you, these politicians, but certainly the people who are, you know, the spokespeople at the top of the Labour Party, the Lib Dems and the government, they will come back to you and they'll say, well, we would love to do all the things you want. Only thing is, we haven't got enough money.
The thing is, I mean, it's like, you know, you've got the likes of Cameron in there. Now I'm supposed to believe that man's there to represent my best interests at heart. I mean, I can't relate to the guy, and that guy can't relate to me. I mean, I was born into a working class family in the northeast, and now I'm living in Bristol. You know what I mean? I'm not a multi-millionaire. I didn't go to Eton. I'm not related to aristocracy or anything like that. Yet I'm supposed to believe that guy can understand my hopes and ambitions.
But it almost, I mean, Cameron is not responsible for his own birth. And how do you react, Mark, to this question? Is that the money's basically run out, so I'm afraid it's just tough.
The money hasn't... The thing is, I mean, it's like, kind of, we all know that they just create money all over the place, you know what I mean? And, well, if the money's run out. I mean, it's like, kind of, all we hear is about how banks make billions and billions of pounds in bonuses. The guys in the FTSE 100 just had a 50% pay rise in the last year. 50% pay rise, while the rest of us are struggling to pay for our energy bills, struggling to pay for our rent, struggling to pay for our mortgages, and every time we go to the shop. I mean, every week food prices are going up. I mean, you've just got to look how much it is to go on the bus. Petrol prices have gone through the roof. Yet these lot at the top of society can award themselves with whatever pay bonuses they want, and yet we're at the bottom, just struggling to make ends meet and get by. And frankly, that isn't good enough. We all want a bigger piece of the pie. We want a society. I want to see a society that we have opportunities, not just opportunities for the rich, opportunities for everybody. You know, and this is why I'm down on College Green, because under the last Conservative government, they destroyed my dad, destroyed my mother, destroyed my family, and I'm not going to stand by and allow them to do it again. You know, I've waited for this moment for nearly 25 years, and now it's happening, and I just hope the rest of the country comes and joins on board, and we bring this government to its knees where it belongs.
Mark, thanks ever so much for taking the time to join us. We're going to be hopefully we'll see you on Wednesday, and we'll catch up again because we're hoping to broadcast live from Occupy Bristol at College Green. But for the time being, that's Mark, who's live at College Green, and if you let Tony know, we'll be back in touch with him shortly with some more interviews. Okay.
All right, will do.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.
Right, guys,
that was Mark. Some salient points, I guess. Mikey, your initial reactions?
Yeah, I mean, he has some good points. What he was chatting about, the government, the monies, when Tony made the point that the money has run out, he broke it down where it's like, well, how can the money have run out if all these companies are paying themselves big bonuses and that? It's a very valid point, and it's very, like, true.
But the other thing is, if you read The Guardian last Thursday, you'd have seen that they're now proposing to start a war with Iran.
Well, there you go.
How come the money doesn't seem to have run out for that, does it?
We did a show last week, and somebody gave me that it seems like a real simple analogy, and I'll try and give it to you. And Tony, I'm sure you shoot me down in flames here, but when they were talking about there isn't enough money, etc., etc., somebody, we actually said, look, imagine somebody comes in with a big tray of chips, okay, a big tray of chips. There's 20 of us in here, okay. One person comes in with a tray of chips. He takes 99% of the chips outside to eat. Big fat guy, right? He leaves 5 chips for the other 19 of us to share, okay? And because there isn't enough to go around, we look around saying, "Nah, Tony, you're old. No, you shouldn't have one. No. Mikey, you're ill. Patty, you're Asian. You're black. No, you've only been in a country." And we start fighting amongst ourselves for the 1% that is left. And they're saying, no, but I need this 99%. What for? So a real simple analogy, people are saying, where's the money? Other stats, is it? I mean, I might be right or wrong.
You know where the money is,
well,
man.
I mean, eight days of the US defense budget, just 8 days, we'll sort out famine for a whole 12 months in the UK.
Not in the UK, in the world. The world, yeah.
$1 million per missile being dropped on Libya. Yeah. But we haven't got any money, no? You know, this is what shocks me. But
a lot of people can't even comprehend the sort of money that these people are playing with. Like, you know, I mean, they're playing with big amounts of money. The amount of money that they spend on the NHS compared to the amount of money that banks get in bonuses is ridiculous. Like, you know, it's
not just the banks, is it? We were speaking to Mark earlier. We were talking about older people trying to heat their houses, their flats. You know, what a terrible thing to say. I can tell you now for certain, in our city, old age pensioners and vulnerable people will die this winter because they cannot afford to heat their homes. And we're civilized, we're in a civilized country. And how much your end power and all the other energy companies make.
The obvious answer to that, Pat, is actually for the government to step in in the energy industry. This is what happened at the end of the Second World War. We realized that actually we needed to make sure that the vulnerable in society had the basic stuff, and that if we left it to private enterprise, that wasn't going to happen, because the main driving force behind private enterprise is the shareholder profit. And unfortunately, you know, this doesn't work for the vulnerable. So an intervention of some sort, literally nationalizing these industries, does one really important thing to them. It takes out the profits that the big fat cat bosses in these utilities, private utilities. It also takes out the shareholder profits that are taken out. So what happens is you end up with a service being delivered to the public which is delivered at cost.
No, but apparently the nationalised industries, according to a young lady, well, she's not young anymore, a lady called Margaret Thatcher, didn't work because they wasted money. They were too big. There were too many middle people in there and whatever. Actually, so they had to privatise. That was their argument, wasn't it? Yeah. That let's
concentrate the way all the money's actually going, like, you know.
Well, that was a myth. Sort of thing, right? You know, can I use the word lie? Because really, I don't think that's true. There isn't any real evidence that things like the British Rail, when British Railways were, you know, we're now in a situation where if you want to go to London, the old style British Rail, what they used to do was, for example, to lay on longer trains on the journeys where actually there's a lot of high density of passengers.
Sure.
Nowadays, if you're on a peak time train around here, if you're running into Bristol in the morning, say from Westbury or somewhere like that through Bath or going to London, you'll find that the peak time trains are absolutely jam packed because they're not running these extra services anymore because they just don't want to hire more trains from the track, the companies that provide the rolling stock. So there's no motive to actually provide a service. At the end of the day, the old nationalised industries, whether it be gas or whatever, their prime motive was to provide a service to the public at the end of the day, and that was what the primary decisions were based on. Then they would go about finding the money to do it and then spreading the cost across everybody. So from my point of view, this is the sensible thing to do right now, is to look at these industries which aren't working, where there is a monopoly, where there's profits being taken. I mean, talking about supermarkets as well, actually, because Tesco's, I mean, we had a report out the other week saying that Tesco's, in their so-called price drops, had actually increased by double the price, right? Just a few weeks previously, they doubled the price, and then they dropped the price slightly, and then they call it a price drop. I'm afraid this is absolutely appalling behaviour by our supermarkets. Just profiteering, taking advantage of people, and lying to people.
Tony,
it's a difficult state of affairs.
There are
going to
be many people listening, many people that are avid fans of the general, you know, the
avid
general
Tesco fans.
No, news agencies. Here they go again. Look, you know, here they go. The communists, the so-and-sos, the anarchists. Here they go again. This is what, you know, I've even had discussions today with unnamed individuals, you know, and sometimes people's views shock me when they're talking about these people on College Green and in thousands of cities across the world. Question I'm going to ask you, do you think at some stage in history, I mean, I'm not that old, no I am, at some stage in history, that the, if you like, the aspirations and the psyche of the British population would change, where to me, when Margaret Thatcher was in, she kind of said to everyone, look guys, you can be better people if you buy your council house, okay? Not by being a decent person and looking after each other. It was about money. It was like following that American dream, where it is, if you've got money, you somehow are going to be like the upper classes or a better person, when in actual fact we ended up being in debt to the upper classes even more, because if I was living in a council house, I just paid me rent, bit nice disposable income, you know, reasonable standard of life. All of a sudden, I was then becoming indebted to this rich, the richest 1%, because I was buying my house. Half of us had it repossessed because we couldn't keep up the repayments.
Well, it was into negative equity. That was one of the big things that happened in the 1980s.
Well, then
80s.
We lost our jobs, and then lots of people, then mum had to work when before she'd be at home, and then Johnny and Susan had to come home to an empty house, and, you know, from school without having parents at home. Yeah. Why? Because they were all taking extra jobs to follow this dream.
The breakup of society, that's sounds like.
But it seems to me that people have become more selfish, and so now, the reason that so many people seem to be criticising protesters about capitalism, but you're all, you know, you're all nutters, you're all communists, you're all this, and, you know, I think that there's a big case for us to put forward, and for the people at Occupy Bristol to put forward, and right across the world, to actually convince normal everyday people, they're right, you are one of the 99%. You're not one of the 1%. Stop sticking up.
And I think that's what this movement around the world is starting to show normal everyday sort of people, when they're getting together, showing solidarity. It's showing people that you're not like them. They're earning way too much for you to even think about it, like, you know. So you should be with us, and on the side with us, like, you know, even though a lot of people don't quite understand their clear objectives and their aims, but it doesn't really seem like that matters at the moment. Like, you know, it's all about showing face, basically, and showing who's who, and getting the message out of the 99% and the 1% and who's who.
Sure.
But we have a wave, don't we, really starting, I think, with the Arab Spring, going, and then Occupy Wall Street 2 months ago. And now here in the UK, we've got something like 7 cities with these occupation camps in Birmingham. Their council are trying to evict the people in Birmingham, so I don't quite know what's happening there. You see, what they're doing is, I believe in Birmingham, that they're now talking about, rather than camping out in the town centre, taking over one of these big conference centres. So they're saying that if you're going to evict us from there, right, well, we're going to occupy somewhere bigger. So, you know, maybe this is not the way that the sensible councils will go. They will contain these things and actually give people their rights. Yeah, as we heard earlier on, this guy from the British Legion is down there, a veteran of the Second World War, probably, saying, actually, we support what you're doing, and this is why we fought the Second World War, for your right to do that.
Well, it's funny how you've got MPs like Stephen Williams, who should be coming onto the Afrotropical show tomorrow, or for Wednesday's show. he's saying that normal everyday people don't want this to happen. They want their college green back. They want it back from the people that are protesting.
Do you think that's part of the propaganda, though? Do you think that is part of the propaganda?
Look at the timing of it. It's Remembrance Sunday. It's like you can use that sort of, you can use that angle, and it would work at this time.
I think the society is divided into people who support this kind of thing and people who don't. Recently, I went down to Basildon to do a vox pop, really, amongst people living in Basildon about the Dale Farm Traveller.
Yeah.
And it was very much divided. Some people very strong one way, other people very strong the other.
Okay.
Very few people were actually saying, well, I don't really have an opinion. Most people were very either supporting the Travellers or else, you know, very much against it, saying they should be evicted.
Now, but Tony, you know and I know that their opinions are based on what they see that coming through the airwaves and some of the comics that they call newspapers.
Some of the people I talked to actually had worked on the site over the years, for example. This is why it's nice to be able to actually go to Basildon to do this rather than to talk to people, you know, 100 miles away.
Okay.
So, but the general opinion was basically, look, you know, leave them alone. Yeah, that was a basic opinion on one Sunday afternoon. It's just nothing scientific about it. Just chatting to people who were milling around the shopping centre on a Sunday. So I think actually what, in a way, is going on with the Occupy movement here in Bristol and the camp on College Green, they're actually ahead of the time. Because in a year or so's time, possibly before that, we're going to have some big changes in the laws for the homeless people in Bristol and right across Britain, which is an attempt by Kenneth Clark, who's the Justice Secretary and Lord Chancellor, all rolled into one. He is trying to make squatting, for the very first time ever in British history, a criminal offence.
Wow.
So that's to say, if you're homeless and you're living on the street, that you are not allowed to use an empty building, even if one of the windows is open and it's been empty for 10 years, you're not allowed to use that to put a roof over your head. Now, to my mind, this is the sort of thing which will be challenged in the European Court of Human Rights, because it's there in the Universal Charter of Human Rights, signed after the Second World War, the right to shelter, as it is in the European Declaration of Human Rights.
Well, it depends
who
you believe. According to the Conservatives and actually many Labour MPs as well, is that people don't want to be in Europe anyway. They don't want to listen to it. They don't want to be ruled from Brussels, is what everyone's saying.
This
is
the UN, Universal UN Declaration of Human Rights as well. So if these right-wingers want to leave the UN... If the right wingers want to leave the United Nations, then they're up in their game a little bit, aren't they? And if they want to throw away one of the most important documents, which was signed after the Second World War, to try and make sure that the spectre of fascism didn't rise again in the world, then, I mean, that's a fairly extreme point of view, right? But that is part of it. The right to shelter is a basic human right. That's what they said after World War II, and that's what we should stick to.
Okay. Funny, it's a Conservative government doing that as well. We're going to get Tony back on the phone from College Green. We're going to take a track first, though, from the great Bob Marley.
Yeah. talking.
Marley and the Wailers, So Much Trouble in the World, 19 minutes away from 6 o'clock. It's Real Talk on Bristol Community FM, your real community radio station. We're going to cross back over now to College Green, where hopefully we have Tony. How are you doing, Tony?
Hello, Pat. Yeah, very well, thank you. Fortunately, the weather's sort of dried up a bit now, so we're not getting so wet.
Excellent.
So that's a bit of a bonus. I've got a young girl here, one of the protesters, Polly. She's busy handing out leaflets to lots of passers-by at the moment, but she's here to have a few words with you, mate.
Thank you, Tony. We'll speak to you shortly. Listen, after we've spoken to Polly, we'll catch up and see if we can find some people that actually don't agree with what's going on down there. That'll
Absolutely.
Be fun.
Okay. Absolutely. I'm just wondering whether that's possible, but we'll give it a good go.
Of course. Okay, mate, no problem.
So here's Polly anyway.
Hi, Polly. How are you doing?
Hi, good, thank you.
Good. You're chatting to Patrick, Mikey and Tony live at the BCFM studios over at the Beacon Centre. So it's dried up. That's one good bit of news, isn't it, hey?
It is indeed, yeah.
And tell us about your involvement in the protest, first of all, Polly, so that we can kind of get a gauge on who we're talking to and why you're saying what you're saying.
Sure. I came down on day 3 and I've just been back every day since. I'm not camping, but I'm coming down here during the day to help out. So, handing out the newsletter, you know, chatting to people on the front desk and just, trying to get involved, really.
And what was it that made you decide that you wanted to get involved?
Well, lots of reasons. I was a student, so I've just finished university. So, obviously, you know, kind of tuition fees and also, you know, how they're sort of taking lots of money out of, 100% of the funding from the social sciences, the arts and humanities.
Okay.
I'm concerned about the fact that we seem to have a two-tier legal system where we have a financial and political and business elite that seem to be immune from prosecution whilst, you know, sentencing for young, poorer people is on the increase.
So many reasons then, not just one, but something that obviously you feel, very strongly about. I'm going to pass you on to Tony now, Polly.
Polly, I'm intrigued as to how you managed to produce a newsletter down on College Green.
Well, like I say, I actually go home every night. So when I go home, I'm producing the newsletter.
What's in today's newsletter? Because people can maybe read that instead of the Evening Post if they want tonight on College Green.
For example, today we've got some stories. One about Goldman Sachs avoiding paying its $10 million in interest. There's a story about the former bank chairman who's head of a newly appointed church committee that's trying to build bridges with the financial sector and the church. Lots of things, really. We've got one about the UK Border Agency. It's basically a summary of some of the most important news stories all on one little piece of paper.
And you managed to produce that at home yourself, do you?
Yes.
Fantastic. Okay. can you? One of the things I always like to ask, though, is it's all very well. I mean, we all know the system is not working very well at the moment, right? We all of us pretty much know somebody who has question marks over the future of their job, questions over whether they will, and particularly if you know somebody who's handicapped or disabled, that big cuts to their benefits, big cuts to things like their mobility allowance. But what would you do? If you were in the driving seat up at Westminster, if you were sitting in number 10 Downing Street, what would you do to actually improve matters? Because this is often lost in all of the melee of this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong.
Sure. sure. I mean, for a start, I would set up a truly independent inquiry into the financial crisis. I was researching it for my master's, and, you know, I found what I believe to be balance sheet fraud, but because the inquiry into it hasn't been independent at all, then nobody seems to have picked up on that. So for a start, I would start looking at where the money's gone and whether the debts incurred are real debts.
Because one of the things I've been hearing is that the bailout money, which we, the public, through Gordon Brown and through the Treasury, paid back in 2007 and 2008 for to recover the banks, a lot of that money has simply gone in bonuses for corporate failure. So as the company has been failing, so the directors have been awarding themselves greater and greater increases in pay. And also that money has been used to continue to lobby the government for what the banking sector want. Now, I find that pretty incredible.
Well, absolutely. And I mean, what the bailout consisted of was actually purchasing shares of the affected banks. So Royal Bank of Scotland, for example, we bought, I don't know, roughly about, I think it's, well, well over 20 billion in shares at 50p each. And the shares are now worth 23p each. So, you know, I mean, the money's just kind of disappearing into this sort of imaginary world of fictitious value, really. It's crazy.
And you're talking about fraud. Do you think actually there's a case here for Scotland Yard going round to all these big banks and simply arresting the directors and questioning them on suspicion of fraud?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I'm not a lawyer, but what I found was with Bradford and Bingley and Northern Rock, what they did was they separated the assets from the liabilities in the balance sheet. And because the balance sheet has to balance, they actually kind of constructed a new debt just by separating the assets from the liabilities and transferring them to different banks. So, yeah.
So, in your opinion, Polly, why haven't their collars been felt?
Sorry?
Why haven't the police been round to feel the collars of these bankers?
Well, it's crazy because we have these new select committees, which isn't, you know, these people aren't being arrested. And the evidence, it's literally called evidence, it's just the directors of the bank saying, oh, yeah, you know, the gamble didn't pay off. But no one's going through the accounts. No one's looking at the actual facts and figures. It's madness.
Well, on the one positive side is that beginning of last week, Competition Commission announced that they are going to, or they are actually now doing a full inquiry into the entire industry of auditing. So the four main auditors, I think it's Deloitte, Touche, KPMG, there's a few of them, aren't there? That they're actually now pulling in all of the information from these auditors, because what they believe is basically that these auditors have been delivering nice sort of five-star ratings for a lot of these big companies, when actually a lot of that money that is supposed to be on their balance sheet is junk, that it isn't actually really worth anything. So those balance sheets ultimately could be fraudulent.
Sure. I mean, there's that side of things. But then, I mean, the government needs to be being audited as well. And that's sort of, absolutely, with those auditors. And I'm really glad that that's happening. But also, you know, like the National Audit Office, who is meant to be the watchdog that looks at how the government spends money. I mean, if you read their report on the financial crisis failure of Northern Rock and stuff, you know, they just haven't actually audited it at all. I mean, it's just it's a whitewash, and, you know, it's...
It seems that there may be an incentive there somehow for them not to find anything. It's almost like, you know, nowadays in archaeology, when a big developer wants to build a big new, say, a skyscraper in a city centre, he'll find an archaeologist who won't find anything. So the archaeologist will go in there and say, oh, there's no archaeology here. And then the skyscraper will just get built on top of something which may actually be quite a valuable bit of archaeology. So it's like the money side of things seems to be polluted almost everything.
Well, that's it. I mean, just money shouldn't be in politics, you know. They're too, I mean, that's just simple, really, in my mind. And as soon as you start getting, you know, money and politics intertwined, then you get corruption. And I'm afraid to say that I think we've got very high level corruption at the
Polly,
moment. And, you know, that's
Polly,
why it's happening.
It's Patrick you're speaking to. Obviously, listening to you, there's just two questions. Obviously, money's got to be involved in politics, simply because, you know, many people would say, come on, that's quite naive to say that, because politicians have got to deal with money, because they've got to spend money in order to, for example, run a welfare state and look after the economy. So you can't separate the two, could you?
I'm not suggesting that, you know, politicians, of course, you know, we have a budget and we have the welfare state. What I mean is money from lobbyists. and yes, bribes, yeah, and the kind of corruption that's coming to light at the moment.
Of course. Now, final question, Polly. There are many critics with the protests going right across the world, but specifically here in the UK, they're saying, well, why not just wait for another election? And then there are others that would say, well, if you wait for another election, there's no one to vote for because all the mainstream parties are exactly the same. So what is your view on that? Do you think it's only now that we've got to do something, or can we wait longer?
I actually don't believe we can wait, to be honest. I don't think, what is it, another 3-4 years until the next election?
Yeah.
We don't have that kind of time, you know. The cuts are already starting to hit people. They're hitting, you know, like we were saying before, sort of disabled people, poorer families, women, far more than, you know, other kind of sections of society. And I don't think we have that time. Plus, even if we were to wait, like you've just mentioned, I mean, you know, you can vote for red or blue, but if the only difference is, you know, kind of like when the cuts are going to happen, rather than there being an open and honest debate about whether they should happen at all, then that's no good in my mind.
Sure. And finally, Polly, just a quick one. If you were to from your perception, a straw poll, give it me in percentages. How many people do you think in the city of Bristol are with what you're doing, and how many people do you think are against in a percentage term?
I mean, it's hard to tell, obviously, you know, kind of like sitting at the front desk or handing out leaflets.
Sure.
I mean, I feel that the support seems to be quite large, and one of the cameramen from the Evening Post was saying that pretty much everyone they're speaking to is really in support of us. So, I mean, it's hard to say, I don't know, in terms of percentages, but I'd say quite a high percent.
Brilliant. Okay, Polly, we'll speak to Vittoni a little bit later, hopefully, if he can find someone that doesn't agree with what's going on. We'll speak to him then. Polly, thanks ever so much for taking your time and all your great work.
Thanks very much for your time. Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
BCFM is your community radio station, and there's something for everyone, which is why BCFM were recently voted the best small station in the Southwest. You'll hear all sorts of music, from country to jazz, classical to reggae, and a lot of Bristol music. There's kids on air, and all sorts of lifestyle and cultures are represented. We broadcast in many different languages, and cover news and views you just won't find anywhere else. BCFM is Bristol's choice. We love our city because Bristol is our community.
Absolutely right. It's Bristol Community FM. Only 8 minutes of this show to go. We've spoken to two very, very interesting people, and we have two more very interesting people in the studio with us, Mikey and Tony Gosling. Guys, what are your thoughts initially on what you've heard so far? I'm quite keen to keep the discussion, if I can, kind of, I'm not saying mainstream, but there are many listeners that are only just learning about these issues, and so if we go too deep at this stage, I think, you know, I don't want to lose people because this is too important. Mikey, you first.
Yeah, I mean, how I sort of see it is, like, a lot of what she was saying was, like, it was very relevant, but I mean, what is the sort of solution to it? It's like, okay, we can audit the sort of banks, we can audit the actual financial crisis, we can set something up to look into it, but if the government and everyone involved in the government has been found out to be fraudulent in some sort of way, then what do we do? I mean, who replaces these people? Who replaces the bank? Doesn't it just simply open it up for another bank?
Sure.
To come in and take
Tony,
over.
I mean, we were talking off air earlier before the show, and you're saying, oh, you're going to hate me, Pat. I'm going to say, get rid of your car, do this. But actually, it's a serious point, okay? If we, as a city, we as a society, want nice things, you know, we want to live in a nice big house, and we want a nice recording studio if we're into that. We want a nice motor, we want nice clothes, certain gear, we want to go on holidays. Do you think as a society we've become too greedy, and by doing that, a lot of the people that don't agree with the protests are kind of saying, well, you know, they're only trying to do their job by making as much money as they can. If we were in that position, we would do it. Do you think as a society we're too greedy?
Well, I think we've been almost brought up, many of us, to be consumerist,
of course,
and consumers. And to a certain extent, going out spending money is a kind of comfort spending. You know, the idea is, well, let's acquire something. That's what I need to make me feel better. Actually, what's going on is something, I think, much more psychological, deep psychological difficulties in our lives, which are things to do with security of tenure. I mean, how many times do you hear it discussed? how important it is to know that you're not going to be evicted from where you live. I think this is actually something that everybody should have the right to somewhere permanent to stay. Yeah. So long as you're paying your rent every week, why should your landlord come along to you and say, right, you're off on your heels now? Yeah. Actually, this is something that all of us need in order to feel content with our lives. And in a way, the whole consumer society is something which is there to sort of satiate our needs and make us feel better, but it doesn't actually address some of the fundamental problems. In a horrible way, ever since the Industrial Revolution, there's been money to be made from angst. This is actually giving people sort of some of the fundamental things that they need, not giving them those things, and actually making people feel a bit disturbed about them not having, whether it's a home, a permanent place to live. These are the fundamentals that people need, and I think if we haven't got them, then we're looking for something to just make us feel better. And that is how consumerism, I think, over the years has come in as the new kind of messiah. You know, it's almost like shopping is the new kind of religion.
But I'm trying to, you know, I'm listening to you, and you know, as I say, I'm an older guy, so maybe I can understand much of what you're saying. But we're talking about our kids now. I mean, you interview them, you talk to young people, even some of our guys on Culture Mash. You ask them what's the most important thing. They want to get a job that makes loads of money. They're from a culture of MTV, of following America, etc., etc., and the arguments that maybe they're listening to today are not going to convince them, because they don't want to. You know, I'm willing to give up my car. I am.
Really?
If no, and this is the important if I felt that by giving up something material, it's going to benefit other people that are in a position worse off than myself, then I would do so. The problem I think many people have is that they don't believe that. They believe by paying higher taxes, for example, the sick and the needy are not going to benefit, and it's been proved that they're not benefiting, because as we said earlier, there will be people that will die this winter in the city of Bristol purely because they cannot afford to put their heating on. That's scandalous.
And these things are so essential to life. I mean, it's like, it is scandalous. And I mean, what Tony was saying about everyone needs a sense of security, I mean, this is why things like Occupy Bristol and Occupy Wall Street are going on, because right now no one feels secure in this financial situation. No one feels secure, like, you know. So,
but there are those that still just want to make more money. They're thinking, look, I haven't got much money now. So what do we do to change the, if you like, the opinion, or to educate the masses? Because at the minute, the mainstream press seem to be not winning the battle, but certainly seem to have that hold on mainstream thinking.
Well, we've seen some big changes, right? We've seen some big changes over the last 10 years since the September 11th attacks. You know, this war on terror, war on a noun, war on, you know, this is a very strange idea, because war is terror. How can you have terror on terror?
Well,
how can you have war on terror? This is a very strange thing that's happened.
Well, terror is a psychological thing.
And it's all it's all very well, so long as it's far away. With the economic crisis, I think what's happening is it's all coming closer and closer to our doors.
Is it interconnected? I mean, come on. I mean, if we get rid of Islam and make everyone hate Muslims, then, you know, I mean, they're a real... No, what I'm saying is they're a real threat to capitalism, aren't they?
They had to spend
Islam is a threat.
They've had to spend lots of money. They've had to spend lots of money on the war on terror. This is one of the reasons there ain't the money to basically pay for the simple things like care for the elderly.
Sure.
Day centres in this city are being closed as we speak. People who are working in those day centres don't know if they're going to be employed in a month's time. Handicapped people are actually at the really the first people who are being
attacked. We don't use that phrase anymore,
don't they?
No.
Well, okay. You tell me the phrase.
People with disabilities
are being actually hit now hard.
Of course.
As a result, I think, of this war on terror. So this is one thing I think is come round from something which is far away, and it's coming closer and closer to home, which is why I'm really glad to see that some people have set up camp to say, well, look, actually, we need a space to decide what we're going to do about this, because our political so-called democracy, you know, let's not forget we're going around the world trying to spread democracy, but our democracy ain't working.
Come on, man. It's like, we ain't going around the world spreading democracy. That's what the lie we're told. What they're actually doing is,
come on, everyone knows America are the police of the world. Well, everyone knows that, with the highest morals.
Yeah.
I say that in jest, listeners. I say, listen, Paul Jeez. D from Bedminster says he's on his way to support Polly now. That is very heartening, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
People at Bristol coming together.
And what can we do? What
I mean, my sort of solution to it would be to re-educate the young people about society, capitalism, and these different forms of government.
Well, I don't think a lot of them need re-educating, actually. I think it's just about organising, because they made a big protest the end of last year. They can see exactly what happened. Yeah. They voted Liberal Democrat on the promise that they were going to scrap tuition fees. What happened?
What happened? They went up.
The Lib Dems had done a deal with David Cameron before the election to massively increase tuition fees, to make the tuition fees the maximum they possibly could be. So they've been betrayed. The young people are very, I think, very wise to what's going on. There's betrayal by our political masters, and this is just the latest instalment of things that have been going on for hundreds of years. 350 years ago, the English Civil War, the Levellers were a movement for more democracy. This is just the latest.
Guys, listen, the debate will go on, and it will certainly go on this station, BCFM. It's been Real Talk. Thank you very much indeed for listening.
This is BCFM 93.2, the community station for Bristol. Listen live online at bcfm.org.uk. BCFM.